Hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, here with the show that comes to you pretty regularly in search of answers to questions large and small, or just those things that are nibbling at your curiosity. Today I have with me some folks who have really been exploring an interesting and curious question with a film that they've created. The film is Doubting Thomas, and it will be screened here at the Vachon Theater Saturday, November 17th, 7 p.m.
16th, I think it is. I'm not...
Saturday, November 16th.
This Saturday. That's a week from today.
That's right.
When we're recording it, I guess this will be airing on
Tuesday. That's right. Yeah. That's right. And I have with me the film's producer, Mark Sayre. Welcome, Mark.
Hello.
And the writer, director, star, Will McFadden. Welcome, Will.
Thank you, Susan. Happy to be here.
It's a delight, and there are so many interesting questions about this film, the making of this film, and what it's like to be involved so deeply as you are, Will, as writer, director, and star. But let's start with the premise of this film. Title is Doubting Thomas. The premise is that a white couple gives birth to a black baby. What happens?
Well, that's kind of the central question of the film, as in, how did that happen? And a lot of people aren't even necessarily aware that that's possible. So as a jumping off point, it's difficult for a lot of people. And it's instantly something that, you're not used to seeing, for sure. And it's very much meant to be about bringing a black child into our very present day America, and the implications of that. And of course, there's questions of fidelity that come up right away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's complicated by the fact that the husband's best friend, and the best friend really of the couple, just happens to be a very charming black man who eventually becomes a suspect.
Wow.
As
yeah.
The possible father.
Many, many levels of storyline, actually. How is this different, and this may sound like a really stupid question, from a white couple that adopts a black child?
That's a great question. I think it's very different, and it's also very much the same in some ways. Because as the couple starts to learn, it's really about how you are viewed on a daily basis in society, and how you're treated as such based on your race and the assumptions that people make. Because, Susan, that's exactly what a lot of people think when they see this couple. They mm-hmm. make the assumption, oh, this is wonderful, you adopt it. And then to have to explain, actually, this one's ours. I'm the biological father. And it just looks completely impossible if you just do the eye test. And to have to deal with people's looks as they try to process that's even a possibility, that starts to really wear on the couple. So Tom believes his wife and decides, they're built on trust, they're going to do this together, and, she is sincerely just as baffled as he is, and she swears he's the only one that can possibly be the father. And she's willing to give him a test, obviously, right off the bat. He makes the decision, which ultimately comes back to really hurt him, to say, look, I believe you. You're my faith. You're my everything. I don't need a test. And lo and behold, that becomes harder to take on faith as people start to react to his newborn child, their newborn child.
So the external influences start to wear on him and on the couple. I take it this is not a comedy?
No.
It's definitely not a comedy. We have some really funny actors, I have to tell you, who are just wonderful, and we need every second of their comic relief. But, tonally it was difficult because it's very much drama, and it's very much... as I was just speaking about it right now, I think of Othello. And you know, the doubt in that character's head, and how that is very much a tragedy.
Yes. That's kind of chilling,
and
actually.
And we have a parallel, you know, Iago character as well, that really revs up the doubt in the main character's head and heart.
So, Will McFadden, this film that you wrote is written based on a true story. How the heck did you find out about that?
Well, it goes way back, and I actually had another writer, one of my dearest friends, create the story with me. It started on the basketball court. Was our thing and play basketball all the time together. We were just chatting, and my friend Joe Campbell was telling me about his biological father, and I knew that his father died when Joe was young, and Joe was raised by a stepfather, but I didn't know how he died. And he said, "You know how my dad died, right?" I said, "I don't think so." And he proceeds to tell me this story, very matter-of-factly, about how his father was on a business trip in Colorado. He went for a run without his identification, and he was stopped by some white police officers. Joe's father was a black man, and he was taken to another part of town and just kind of dropped off and told, you know, "You're in the wrong place," kind of thing. And he made his way back to where he was, and the same cops saw him again. This time it wasn't as peaceful. There was an altercation. He was put in a chokehold, and he blacked out. He never woke up. And that was the story of how his father died.
Wow.
I was obviously kind of taken aback and wanted to ask so many more questions, but that was pretty much the long and the short of it. But that became the seed of this story that became about a couple and their best friend and relationships and love and trust and race and identity right now in our present day America.
Was there a white couple in Joe Campbell's family's experience that gave birth to a black child?
No, there was not. There was, you know, there were absolutely different levels of dark and light as far as complexion. But the idea came from, what if that was the possible recessive gene and someone somewhere along the line ended up passing as white? But I'm trying not to give too much away, Susan.
Right, right. Well, and there are stories about folks who have passed as white in our culture. Mark?
Yeah, there was a really fabulous article in the last week, in fact, about a woman that did. It's an interesting read.
Mm-hmm. So you conceived of this story with your friend Joe Campbell 10 years ago, right, Will?
That's right. I think it's over 10 now. We conceived of the story and started working on it together. And, you know, it became... The story that I described about Joe's father, unfortunately, became this kind of phenomenon because those kind of things started to be recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And the Black Lives Matter movement really became super prevalent. And so many people were telling us, you know, "Oh, you got to get your film out. It's so timely, you're going to miss the window." And then Obama got elected, and then people told us it's a shame you couldn't have got your movie out. It would have been so relevant, but now we're post-racial, and we've figured this out. And Joe and I weren't convinced.
Yeah.
And,
smart.
Lo and behold, you know, here we are, and Jamie Hector, who plays my best friend in the film, always kind of got me to trust that it would come out at precisely the time it should. And... you know, I never would have guessed that today, you know, as far as in my lifetime, certainly, you know, white nationalism and all of that is more emboldened than ever before. And I feel like it's a divisive, really trying time.
Indeed it is. So you started this process 10 years ago. Mark Serra, when did you get involved?
It was... only a few years ago, probably Well, I went to Will. Will and I have been friends for a long time, and he did, after he had written the script, he was having a table read for it, and he had invited me. And you know, at the time, I didn't know anything about the project; I wasn't attached to it. But listening to the script for the first time, it really had an impact on me, and I had some thoughts to share with Will as well. And we just had a really fabulous discussion after the table read. But there were two other producers that were already attached, and it was going a very particular direction. You know, lo and behold, as things go with the independent filmmaking landscape, a couple of years later, Will was still working on, you know, getting the financing put together. And so he came to me and asked if I would come on board and assist and help. And our journey sort of started together from there, as well with other producers, Laura Salvato and Casey Morris. And it took us another, what do you think, Will, year and a half, 2 years, kind of doing our thing.
Yeah.
And then we were able to, you know, finally realize the film. And even getting to production, you know, that was the first third of the journey, maybe quarter of the journey. You had production itself, and then we also spent a considerable amount of time in post, you know, just polishing this thing and, you know, having really tough discussions about what we were saying, what we wanted to say, and how we wanted to say it. And the thing just evolved into what it is now. But it was a process, but it was super, super fun and very rewarding.
Mark, did you edit the film as well as produce it?
I did, yeah. And with Will by my side.
He did an absolutely brilliant job, and it was really reverse engineering the film in many ways. It was kind of like making it again in an entirely different setting. And I just am so grateful for that part of it and getting to work with Mark on that part of it. But, you know, for me, Mark coming on board was really, you know, he was clearly someone who could get things done, but it was really more his take on the script and his creative input and his thoughts around that. You know, Mark, like myself, has had, you know, very close friends and family who are not white, and that's informed his experience. And I think he challenges himself on a level to, you know, explore that constantly. And I think, you know, what we've learned is that white people want a way to do that. It's not often there, and the film is really able to start these difficult but we feel really important kind of discussions
among white people.
Yeah, and our participation in this idea of whiteness that's bad for everyone, you know, privilege that you're not necessarily aware of, and you know, becoming an ally, or perhaps the next step past ally, where you can really hold yourself and everyone else accountable.
Yeah, does the term racist come up in the film?
Well, it's funny you should ask. Yeah. Because there, we did have a scene that's a very powerful scene, sort of near the end of the film, where the term was directly employed. We wound up cutting it out of the film, actually, and there was a couple of reasons that we wanted to do that. One, it's such a polarizing word for so many people that sometimes it shuts down dialogues that need to happen. So there is a part of us that was super cognizant of that. But it was also, you know, the onus was on us when making the film, where, you know, Will and I, you know, both identify as Caucasian, where it was important for us to focus on what we should be focusing on as white men, which was deconstructing the white male gaze. And, you know, that informed a handful of decisions that we needed to make about the film that were difficult decisions, But I think that, you know, eventually we came to the conclusion that was right for us and what we felt was right for the film. And the film isn't a film designed to, you know, provide solutions. It is a film designed to open a dialogue and a discourse and to create a discussion and a safe space for people to ask questions. And to that extent, I think the film really is a water cooler film where you watch it and then you talk about it for a while afterwards.
Yeah, you've screened this film in a number of other places besides Vashon Island. Yeah. I'd like to hear how your audience has reacted.
Well, I'm really excited that Mark is going to be there for this one, because I end up having to call Mark and frantically try to tell him how incredible the reactions were from all over the country. We started in L.A., then we went to Jersey City, New York area, then we went dead center, Wichita, Kansas. And then we went to Martha's Vineyard. We sold out the Vineyard Film Center twice.
Wow.
And it was really incredible. What ends up happening, just like Mark said, you know, days later, people will have to seek me out and say, you know, I can't stop thinking about this, or I can't stop, not necessarily arguing, but talking with the people I saw it with. And, you know, what we found is that it's really the kind of thing where you can't not put yourself in that situation as a hypothetical. What would I do? You know, you have, a long time ago, I think there was, I learned about this, you know, barometer for if you're racist or not, is how you would really feel. You check in with yourself if a black person moved in next door. And in this scenario, they're moving in and they're yours and it's a baby and you're responsible for it in your very own home. And, you know, it applies to different scenarios where, you know, you think you have a certain set of values based around race and identity and this idea of the other and privilege, and then you're confronted with it in a new way, and you know, it's a kind of self-reflection moment that's really really pretty cool to witness take place.
Let me ask you this, Will, was there a difference in reactions among people of color and white people? And if so, what were those differences?
Yes, there were really pronounced differences. You know, Martha's Vineyard, we screened it there. It's a wealthy, primarily white community. And people were uncomfortable. People were very kind of quiet and reflective. We screened it the next month in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, almost entirely black audience. Mm. And suddenly the film became a comedy. It was a totally different experience. And it became clear that, you know, for white folks, you're not as comfortable laughing at these things where you could be seen as not even so much racist, but flippant or not taking it seriously enough. And it's a loaded, obviously a loaded, topic. Whereas, you know, I know I should share this with you, Mark, but one of the coolest, bits of feedback I got was in, Brooklyn, an older black man after the film said he felt like he was witnessing what, Toni Morrison described as of racism infect a population, and he was able to be a fly on the wall for that, and he had never been able to just watch.
To see so how racism is it ingested, if you will, into a culture?
Yeah, and he had never really just been able to sit back and say, well, now I just see how these white people figure this out, you know, because that's not normally depicted.
Showing,
you know, normally films about race, we know exactly who the races are, and we know who the victims are, and, you know, we condemn them like we're supposed to, and we feel better about the progress we've made as a society, and, you know, that's not our movie.
And we can all walk away thinking that we're not racist white people, and we're good people, and we don't have to think about it anymore.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Fascinating.
This is quite the opposite, you know, and that's very much on purpose.
So the two of you obviously worked on the evolution of this film up to the last minute in your editing process. I know, yeah. Will, you mentioned something in an article you wrote about the ending and how I think you had a couple different endings. But I don't want to go to that because we only have a little bit of time left. And when I see that someone has both written, directed, and starred in a film, I think, how can you possibly do a good job at all three? So how did that work for you, Will?
Well, it wasn't always the idea. I didn't have any intention of directing the film. That's how it shook out. And, you know, for me, at some point, you know, I really had to just focus on being an actor in the scene. Really, I'm an actor who wrote a script and then became this writer-director person. So I was lucky enough to have people around me that were very experienced, very talented, who I could really trust, a great DP, great assistant director. And, you know, creating an environment on set for actors to do their best work was something that was done for me. I contributed to it, I'd like to think, but, you know, I was very lucky in that respect. And the thing for me is, you know, the story had been with me for so long, and I was going to do anything and everything I could to stay true to the heart of that film and honor Joe and his story and his father and really the heart of the film, which is meant to bring us closer to one another. It's meant to be a way towards empathy. And I was going to stay to that.
I would guess that while you were living with this script that you had written, you had a vision of how it was going to look. How close did the finished product fit that vision or match that vision?
So far from it. It's so far from it. It's an entirely different thing. And I think that's normal. I think Mark would agree. I mean, that's often the case.
I think that's par for the course with most independent films, which is super interesting.
Yeah.
But you have at the script level when you read it, and you know, we're all capable of generating our own imagery and vision of what we foresee something to be. And then once you make it, it takes on this whole new life, and it's re-envisioned there during production. And then you get to post-production and you do it again. So for me, with filmmaking, the thing is the writing never doesn't stop when you finish the script. You write again when you're in production. You write a third time when you're in post-production. You know, it's just different phases. And then, you know, by the time you're done with the film and you look at it, it's like, how did we get here?
Yeah. It's a collaborative,
yeah.
creative
oh, it
process.
It takes an army to make these things.
It does.
And it's by no means just Will and I. It's on the backs of a lot of, you know, very dedicated, hardworking people. And that's everybody, you know, from the top to the person that's grabbing coffee. I mean, it really takes everybody to make these things work.
Yeah, it is like setting up a corporation and running mm-hmm. a business and then tearing it down, I guess, when you're yeah. all finished. Of course, you're not finished yet. You're in the midst of distribution.
Yeah.
So, Will, you mentioned the atmosphere on set and how that atmosphere was created and how presumably it informed the final product. How would you describe that atmosphere? What was it about the atmosphere that you and your colleagues created that helped to make this film work?
Well, I think there's a recognition that it is an independent film, that we needed to be efficient on top of our game. It was a 14-day shoot here in L.A.
Yikes.
Which is real quick.
Yeah, man. That's fast.
Real quick. And, you know, I think it becomes kind of contagious when you feel the focus and the care, the passion coming through. I think people latch on to that, and it becomes kind of a prevailing attitude on set.
Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, I was just going to say, one of the other things, and this is, you know, probably one of the things I love the most about film production, is that each time we make one of these during production, you're with these people. every day. And they're not normal days. They're not 8-hour days. They're very often 10 to 16 and 18-hour days, even sometimes, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But when you spend so much time with people in this very finite amount of time over, you know, a couple weeks or a few weeks or longer, if they're bigger movies, you develop these bonds in sort of this sense of family so quickly. And it's weird because it's temporary. And when you're done, there is this weird bittersweet, you know, thing that you go through where, oh my gosh, we've just made this, but now we're done and I don't get to see these people tomorrow. You know, not to say that you won't see him again on another movie, and we
but
do very frequently do, but you never know.
Yeah.
And so there is this kind of, you know, beautiful tragedy to it.
The melancholy.
Yeah, melancholy.
Yeah. So I would suspect then that both casting and personnel selection have a lot to do with both the atmosphere on set and the ultimate product.
Totally.
How involved were you, Mark, in all of that casting and personnel selection?
Oh, very involved. Yeah, both Will and I were, extremely involved.
Yeah, I would say Mark probably even more so than me on a lot of it.
That's because some of that stuff boils down to business decisions too. You know, there's two sides. You know, even when we're casting, where we have to look at it for what is creatively appropriate. But then what also makes sense for the film from a financial perspective, because we do have a duty to our investors. And the more money you spend, the more, you know, the market value of the production becomes very important so that we can, you know, recoup. At the end of the day, it's a product. And unfortunately, you know, with this type of art, since it's consumed in a commercial fashion, that is, you know, a driving factor behind making some really big creative decisions.
So were you able to stay within budget?
We were. We did good on that, yeah.
That's impressive in and of itself.
Yeah.
That makes 14 days really hard.
Oh, they were hard, but they were also a lot of fun and you know, very gratifying at the end of it.
I would just also add, excuse me, Susan, I was just going to build on that to say that, you know, as far as your question about the attitude on set as well, you know, I think it helped that we were making a film that was about something. It wasn't a horror movie or a rom-com or something that you're used to seeing. It was clearly a risk, and it was different, and we had something to say, you know, and the people who responded to the material and wanted to do the film, were bringing that to set. And I think that became really something that helped everyone focus.
A commitment to a message. Well, we are about out of time. I want to thank you, producer Mark Sayre, and writer-director star Will McFadden of the film Doubting Thomas, for being here on Real Talk. Folks, on Vashon, you can see this film Saturday, November 16th, 7 p.m.
8 p.m.
8 p.m.
Yeah.
At the Vashon Theater. And I want to thank you all for listening. Thanks for listening to Real Talk. This is the show where, yes, Mark?
I have one more thing to say.
Okay.
If you can't make the screening, the good news is it is also available on pretty much all of your favorite platforms right now. So cable and satellite, stuff like Comcast, Spectrum, Cox, Dish. You can also get it on iTunes, Amazon, Vudu, Google Play, YouTube Red, Vimeo On Demand, the Microsoft Store, and Fandango Now, to name a few.
DoubtingThomasMovie.com and Vashon Theater, Saturday, November 16th. Thanks for listening to Real Talk. We're here every week on Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington, your island connection, and at voiceofvashon.org.